Today, on Rainbow Country, award-winning films walking away with 2 Academy Awards, Ford v. Ferrari, plus from The Hollywood Reporter's 25 Best Performances of 2019, Synonyms. Stay tuned for Gay Talk Radio right here on Rainbow Country.
Hi, I'm Garrett Conley, author of Boy Erased, a memoir. You're listening to Rainbow Country with Mark Tara on CIUT 89.5 FM.
Well, hello, and welcome to a fresh episode of Rainbow Country, what I like to call a little gay radio show working to give voice to the LGBT community and beyond. As always, I am your tour guide through Rainbow Country, a Mark Tara. So, this is episode 188. Today, nominated for 4 Academy Awards, walking away with 2 Oscars for Best Film Editing, Best Sound Editing, Ford v. Ferrari. Today, I'm going to go back to TIFF 2019 coverage with my conversation with Oscar-winning stunt coordinator Robert Nagel to talk about Ford v. Ferrari. But up first, recently, The Hollywood Reporter released their film critics pick for the 25 best performances in film for 2019. Included in that list is first-time actor Tom Mercier, star of the award-winning film Synonyms. So during TIFF 2019, I caught up with the filmmaker of Synonyms, Nadav Lapid, to talk about his award-winning film and more. Up next, my interview with the director of Synonyms, Nadav Lapid. An award-winning filmmaker. He is Nadav Lapid. Hi.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm fine, fine.
A little tired?
A bit tired. Toronto is very intense, but intense for good reasons. Nothing to complain, I guess.
Yeah. How has your experience in Toronto so far been?
How am I staying in Toronto?
Yeah. How has it been for you so far?
Actually, it's my first time in TIFF. I was here a year ago. They made me a retrospective.
A retrospective.
Perspective, yeah, in the Bell Light House. That's how we call it now. Mm-hmm. But this is the first time I'm showing a film in TIFF. And I didn't know it's so huge. I mean, I didn't know
it's... The festival.
I didn't know it's so enormous. It's like I know very well for years the European film festivals. I had films in Cannes, I had film in Venice, Berlin, Locarno, but as I said, never been here, and it's extremely impressive.
Because you've been to all of those festivals, how does TIFF rate in your opinion?
I think that let's say that I think that TIFF is different because of the fact that it's not competitive. So there's something more open about it, more tolerant in a way about it. You know, the moment that there is a competition, so you're obsessed with ranking, you're obsessed with... And here there's something... Maybe in this sense it deals more with movies instead of ranking them and right. giving points all yeah. the time.
So in 2019, Berlin, the Berlin Film Festival, your film, Synonyms, won the Golden Bear Award, basically the best picture for that film festival. How does that make you feel?
Happy, but I mean, glad. Yeah, it was great. I'm this kind of person. So I don't know if it's kind of person or that always grasp things a bit late, like 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 1 month later. So I remember that during I'm competitive, so I wanted to win, and during the I was, you know, it's a strange situation because, like, I think in all the big film festivals, they there's a moment that they call you or they call your producer and they ask you to stay, so you understand that okay, that you got to stay for the ceremony award, so they say okay, I want something, but you don't know what, and there are several awards. And then you try to get some information, like you say, okay, who should stay? Does the actor should stay? They don't say anything. They are very discreet. So you get there in the ceremony award, and everyone gets there, and people start to look at each other. Suddenly you understand who is here, who is not here. So you said that this guy is here, this guy is not here. Okay, so maybe he won, maybe I won. And you try to understand who won what. And of course, and you know, on the table, there are like six or seven silver bears and one golden bear. And then they start to announce the awards. And each time, on one hand, you want to win. On the other hand, you want other person to win. Because then, of course, I mean, they start with a silver bear, and at the end, there is the golden bear. So, and then there's the moment that all the other got their bears, and you sit all alone without a bear, but you see yours, the golden one, shining on the table, and you understood that...
You won.
That you won.
And what did that... How did that moment feel for you when you realized?
I was really happy and excited, but I was mainly occupied with procedural issues, like if I should go on stage from left or from right, if I should shake the hand of Juliette Binoche, who was the president of the jury, or kiss her on the cheek. Who should I thank to? Whether I should first? I was preoccupied with this, and the other thing is that it's pretty personal. But my mother was the editor of my movies, and she passed away during the editing. So I was, I think, in a way, also. Oh yeah, thinking of her. So only, and I have this tendency, I don't know why, to at the beginning kind of instinctive tendency to I don't know, to react. I mean, like my first sentences are okay, at the end it doesn't matter, it's only a statue, we all know that it's accidental, at the same time another movie could have won. And Only 2 or 3 weeks later, you start to understand that it's, even symbolically, it's a big thing, because, well, Berlin is one of the three biggest film festivals. I mean, I don't speak about Toronto, it's not competitive, but Cannes, Berlin, Venice, so it's one of the three biggest awards that the cinema can give. And also, you know, when you start to travel around with the movie, so you're a little bit like, it's a little bit like having like in the, I don't know, middle age, when you are like, I don't know, the Count of Burgundy, so you are the holder of the golden bear, like they say, the golden bear winner is here, the golden bear winner is here, so you feel as if you have a title.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
yeah, you have a title,
and it's a fitting tribute to your mom.
Yeah, yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Talk to me about the title of the film, Synonyms. Where does that come from?
Originally, it comes from, well, Synonyms, it's a film that is really based on my own personal experience. I made a 3.5 years of military service. It was a tough, very tough military service. But I was a, nothing to be proud of, but I was a very good soldier because I was completely stupid. I didn't understand what does it mean to kill and to die. So I was...
Did you have to kill people?
I mean, I hope I didn't, but I can't be sure. Mm-hmm. It's
you were in actual combat.
Yeah, it's like it's in a way it's wartime. So, and only later in a way you realize what you've been passing through and what you took part in. So 1 year after my military service, I went. I felt an urge to run away from Israel, to leave this. What seemed to me to be a cursed place and never come back, and I stopped talking Hebrew. Like I felt as if, you know, if you run away from the demon, you cannot speak his language. So for me, each word in Hebrew contained exactly the thing I ran away from. So it was counterproductive to detach myself from this place, which is also my own identity, and to keep on. I wanted to die as an Israeli and be reborn as French in a way, and the language, the Hebrew, had to die with me. So and then I was a man without words. So I have to find new words, these words in French, and I wanted to be more French than any French people. So I wanted to. If they know a word, I wanted to know 7 synonyms for the word. So I was obsessed with synonyms. So when I was very lonely, and I had no one to talk to, and no way to practice my synonyms. So whenever I met someone, I was throwing on him a list of synonyms. So every conversation was extremely long, as you can imagine, because each word was doubled by 7. But this was the thing. I was walking all alone in the streets of Paris and mumbling synonyms. But it's also about... In a larger way, I think that, let's say that if the main actor at the beginning, he runs away from Israel in order to get to France, because in his head, Israel is hell and France is paradise, and they are opposed, they are antonyms. At the end, he finds out that maybe for the best and for the worst, they are synonyms. They resemble much more one to the other, and all the countries maybe in a way resemble one to the others, and all the national hymns resemble one to the other, so we are all synonyms in a way.
The story is essentially your story. Is the main character essentially you then?
One might say it. Well, let's say that being incarnated by the, I think, unbelievable Tom Mercier, it's a better version of myself. It's an improved version of myself.
The character in the film.
The character in the film, because of the main actor, I think.
Mm.
But yeah, it's totally based on my own experiences.
So there's a scene in the film that I'm calling it the listening to music with headphones scene. And for me, personally, as a gay person, there was an undertone in the film of attraction between the two male characters.
Totally.
And in that one scene, when they're listening to music on the headphones, the little gay boy in me, I'm like, are they... But nothing happens, really.
Yeah.
It's very... flirtatious. It's very in a way sensual, but nothing really happens. And I was wondering if that was a conscious choice on your part to not take it to another level between the two male characters.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's something in, I mean, clearly emotions and affection exist in the movie only between men, while sex exists only, I mean, the sex in the film is straight, but the tenderness, the affection, the fascination, the curiosity exists only between men. I mean, I remember that few people told me maybe he should have given his stories to the woman and have sex with the men instead of in the film it's the opposite. But
that was obviously a conscious choice for you to do that.
Yeah, it was a conscious choice. In a way, I felt that this homoerotic ingredient would be stronger if he would stayed as a reflection, as a thought, as a fantasy, and not as a specific act. And I think that in a way it's also based on my, as I said, in my military service, I did 3.5 years in a small military base surrounded only by men. You're very young, and all you're full with emotions, with pulsions, and all of them are directed to men. But it's a very straight place in a way, because it's based on virility, manhood. So everything is there, but no one kisses with no one. But all the other things are there.
You can feel the tension.
Exactly, exactly. Mm-hmm. Fascination and love and attraction and curiosity. But
you don't go there.
But you don't go there, yeah.
Where did your love for film come from?
From Emile, from the French friend. The French friend in the movie.
Your love for film came from that character?
From the character of the French. I mean, it's he who taught me about movies. It's he who I was pretty ignorant.
So that was a real person then.
Yeah,
that character.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it's Emile who he gave me this huge gift. We went to the movies and it's through him that I understood. It's he who told me for the first time, even there's things like a shot and sequence and frame and camera and editing. I didn't know that all of this exists, and then I understood that at least for me, cinema is the most powerful and accurate mean to express the truth of our existence. Mm-hmm.
You studied philosophy?
Yeah.
Do you think that your philosophy and what you learned helps you in your filmmaking?
I think that it makes me less fascinated by the story itself. Like, the story is not a goal, but the story is a platform in my movies in order to express a certain sensibility towards existence, a certain feeling, a certain existential melody. This is maybe kind of philosophical element in my movies. The fact that at the end what I'm looking for is how do you feel about life at this specific moment? How do you feel about being a human being? And I think that in a way it turns my movies to be what people call universal, because for instance, even synonyms. I mean, I don't think that at the end it's about Israelis and French people. It's more for me like a modern legend. I mean, what happens to someone who suddenly feels that he lives in hell and that the demon is inside him? Like in Rosemary's Baby, like in a kind of horror movie, and he has to run away to the other side of the world in order to kill the demon, but the demon is himself.
Am I accurate in saying this? Did you also write books?
Yeah.
How many?
I wrote two novels.
Yeah, and was that in Israel?
I wrote them when I lived in France, but I wrote them in Hebrew. Yeah.
Wow. Are you happy with how they turned out?
Yes, totally.
So your movie, your current movie, Synonyms, when people see the film, what do you, as the filmmaker, what would you like the audience ultimately to come away with after seeing your film, Synonyms?
I think that, you know, Synonyms is not a film that, I mean, you cannot resume easily, like, kind of short message when you talk about Synonyms. But let's say that maybe there are two things. One, that if you study something in the end, and it's a big question if you can study something from life, if there is a lesson to learn in life, except for living them. But if you can talk about something like this, it's maybe that at the end it doesn't matter, or maybe it doesn't matter so much what you love or what you hate. It matters who you are, because the this guy is all the time obsessed with the question. He hates being Israeli. He loves being French. No, he hates also being French. But in a way, I mean, yeah, I mean, there's no place is distant enough in order to be able to run away from yourself.
Wow. Not even space.
Not even space.
Three quick questions. Red or white?
Super complicated questions. I admire red and I admire white. Can I choose both?
Okay. Day or night?
Night.
Leather or lace?
Leather.
And that's it. That's it.
We finished with leather.
Thank you so much for your time.
Thanks a lot. It was a pleasure. Thanks so much. Thanks.
Bill 7, to ban discrimination in employment, government services, and housing based on a person's sexual orientation was up for a vote at Queen's Park. Most NDP and Liberal MPPs supported the bill, but without some progressive conservative legislators backing, a divisive split could rack the province. Four PCs decided to break party ranks to vote with their conscience and support Bill 7. Cabinet Minister and MPP Dennis Timbrell did it to show solidarity for his beloved brother, the well-known drag queen, Rusty Ryan. And for me, a gay politician who was not yet out, I had to take a stand. We were known as the Gang of Four. I'm former Cabinet Minister and MPP Phil Gillies. The date, December 2nd, 1986, when LGBT rights came to Ontario.
My name is Charles Officer, and I'm the writer and director of Invisible Essence, The Little Prince. You're listening to Rainbow Country with Mark Tara on CIUT 89.5 FM.
Synonyms is out now on streaming. Check it out at kinonow.com. So let's talk Oscars 2020. Nominated for 4 Academy Awards, walking away with 2 Oscars, Best Film Editing, Best Sound Editing, Ford v. Ferrari. Up next, the Oscar-winning stunt coordinator of Ford v. Ferrari, Robert Nagel.
How long we known each other, Ken? I ever break a promise to you? I will put you in the driver's seat at Le Mans. You just shut your mouth and let me do my thing. All right.
Come here. Morning, Shelby.
Morning, Molly.
I'm yours.
I'll go to hell.
And that's it, folks. Ferrari wins the 24 Hours of Le Mans for the 5th consecutive year.
Mr. Ford, Ferrari has a message for you, sir.
What did he say?
He said Ford makes ugly little cars in ugly factories. And he called you fat, sir. We're going to bury Ferrari at Le Mans.
So the great Carroll Shelby is going to build a car to beat Ferrari with a Ford.
Correct.
And how long did you tell them you needed? 200 or 300 years?
90 days.
Ford hates guys like us because we're different.
We heard he's difficult.
Ken? No, Ken's a puppy dog.
It's awful. There's a problem. The computer will find it.
Get some scotch tape and a ball of wool.
What are they doing?
Making your car faster.
That's more rocket!
Ken Miles is not a Ford man.
We're on the verge of something, and now you tell me that I can't have the best man in the world behind the wheel?
Give me one reason why I don't fire everyone, starting with you.
Well, sir, we're lighter, we're faster. So nice. And that don't work, we're nastier.
Go ahead, Carol. Go to war.
You got a plan?
It's high risk.
I thought the whole point was to win the damned race.
If this were a beauty pageant, we just lost.
Looks aren't everything.
He is arguably one of the top working professionals in Hollywood right now. He is Academy Award winning stunt coordinator. He is Robert Nagel. Hi.
Hi, Mark. How are you?
I am well. How are you?
Fantastic. Thank you.
Okay. So let's start here with Ford v. Ferrari. You are the stunt coordinator for this film. I'm interested to know, have you seen the final version of the film?
I don't think I've seen the absolute final. I've seen 2 versions of it. And the last version I had seen, there were still a couple pieces that needed to be smoothed out. But I believe the version I've seen is 99.9% of the version that is currently playing.
Understood. So, Mr. Nagel, I have seen the film, and I have to say, I have some issues. Do you want to hear my issues?
Sure, why not?
Okay, first of all, I saw the film, I laughed, I cried twice, and I ruined my makeup. Okay, those are my...
So I did my job.
Those are my issues. I loved the film.
I love to hear that. It was a, everybody was very invested in the film, and I think it shows. And to hear what you just said, I think proves that. And that's fantastic to hear.
What drew you to this particular project? Why this project?
I come from the racing world. And the GT40 has always been sort of an amazing vehicle, and the story that goes behind it, I think, is amazing. And it's a conceptual design, that vehicle, that holds true today. And for it to have been born in that era and it still hold up today is pretty amazing. And the lengths that Ford went through to develop that vehicle is pretty astounding. And then to know more detail into that story, once I got to know the real story, was, you know, the layers involved were just, it's quite a story.
Before you came on board this project, did you know of this story originally?
I did. I don't know if not everybody knows, but originally Michael Mann had been involved in it, and I'd gotten more in-depth knowledge at that point, and then the project kind of went away. So when it came back around and I sat down with James Mangold, I already knew quite a bit of the project, and it had changed a little bit, and I knew all the ins and outs of it to start with. And so it's always been something that I've been passionate, hoping that it would come back around.
So, like I said before, I saw the film. I love the film. And for me, it's an ensemble cast. But part of that cast are the racing scenes. Incredible.
Yes. And I always imagined as that, you know, the cars themselves are sort of another character as well.
So talk to me about that process. At what point do you, as a stunt coordinator, come onto this project and start coming up with ideas, concept for the stunts? At what point does that happen in the filmmaking process, especially for this project?
I mean, they're all a little different. For this particular one, early on, James allowed me and Darren Prescott, who was the second unit director, to really come up with the race sequences and all the action sequences. There were some already pieces to some of these races that we had to adhere to, but the storyline for each race I was able to develop and design so that it was very cohesive and had a rhythm to it and had a story to each race that kind of would keep you engaged, if that makes sense.
And I understand that you trained Christian Bale in the driving process?
I did. And he's hands down the best actor I've ever trained. And I've trained numerous actors in driving. And he is just absolutely amazing. He certainly has the aptitude for it. And there's just there's a level and a methodology, level of focus and a methodology that goes behind driving cars like this. And he was able to apply that very, very well.
In watching the film, I loved the racing scenes, especially when there were quick edits between you're seeing his foot hitting the pedals and switching the gears. And I found myself saying, not yet, not yet, not yet. And so in the film, the Matt Damon character talks about breaking a finger. And I understand that you broke your thumb doing a Sprint NASCAR commercial, like back in the day?
I did, yeah.
So is that the only injury that you've had during your professional career?
I mean, it's the only, I'm going to say, substantial injury. There's a cumulative injuries when you start crashing cars that happen, but that was the only instant injury, if you will, during a wreck that we did. But there's a cumulative injuries, you know, that show up later on in life.
So you mentioned earlier you have a background in car racing. How did you get into that profession in the first place?
You know, even as a child, I'd always been drawn to speed, whether it was, you know, riding a big wheel as fast as I could or a bicycle, and then tinkering around with go-karts and eventually getting in the cars. I always tried to see how fast could I make them go, which eventually led me to racing. And I started with drag racing first because it was ultimately just about how fast you could make a car go. But I got bored of it because you're racing, you know, 10 seconds at a time and sit around for a couple hours versus road racing. We raced for hours and, to me, it was a far more mentally challenging venue. And I've always described it as a chess game at 150 miles an hour.
2015, you received an Academy Award along with Alan Paddleford for technical achievement.
The Biscuit Junior was named because its earlier design, the Biscuit, was used to shoot horse racing scenes in the film Seabiscuit. It solves those problems by creating a low-profile engine that sits right underneath the actual picture car.
The innovation is the remote systems drive pod, and this allows the actors to be in the hero car with the actual driver out of sight of the cameras. Multiple camera angles capture realistic-looking driving, while the actors can focus on their job safely and without distractions.
The Biscuit Junior has been used in high-profile films, including Drive, which involved some extremely tricky stunt driving, and most recently in the Academy Award-nominated Nightcrawler. For this innovation, the Academy presents a Technical Achievement Award to Robert Nagel and Alan Paddleford. Gentlemen, unbuckle your seatbelts and come on up to the stage.
Hi, I am Alan Paddleford, and this is Robert Nagel. And I'd like to thank the Academy for bestowing this most prestigious award to Robert and I. I would also like to thank some of the great people who took the time to sing the accolades of our work that brought the attention to the Academy. And that's Roger Deakins and Robert Elswit, Ilya Popov, Matt Sweeney, Darren Prescott. And in addition, many thanks to Gary Ross and Les Tamita for having faith in our idea for the original movie that we used it for, which was Seabiscuit. And last, but most certainly most importantly, thanks to our wives, Robin and Shannon, for their support in this crazy business. My sons, Kyle and Riley, who are headed for the same business. Our dedicated crew at Alan Paddleford Camera Cars, who build the vehicles and maintain them. And, of course, all the hardworking men and women of our extended film industry who've been a fan and supported us for all these years. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
In a nutshell, you invented this apparatus. Talk to me about what the Biscuit Junior is and what it does.
So at its basic level, it's a drivable platform that we can put, generally speaking, a car on, and you can put the actor in the car, and it allows you to be inside the car and look almost, not quite 360 degrees inside the vehicle while the actor looks like the actor is driving. And we can drive this thing at speed. And we used it quite a bit in the Ford Ferrari film, a little bit of a modified version, in that we could actually be outside the car and look down the side of the vehicle that Christian was driving and see the ground and bring cars up next to him, almost wheel to wheel, and really getting in the middle of the race. And we were running at speed, 130, 140 miles an hour with Christian in that rig.
That's incredible. So let's stay on your Academy Award for a hot minute. Did you know that ahead of time you were going to get that award?
No, absolutely. Well, I mean, yeah. When we built the thing, no, that was never in mind. But there comes a time when somebody goes, you really should send this to the Academy and have them look at it. And we kind of hummed and hawed and said, oh, sure, yeah, whatever. Yeah, didn't think much of it. And the Academy, they just went nuts over it. They just thought it was amazing.
So when they called your name and you went up on stage, what was going through your mind?
It's a bit surreal. I mean, there's a lot to take in. It was quite an evening, and there's a lot of other award recipients. And kind of a blur to me, to be honest.
Do you think it's important that stunt coordinators get recognized by the Academy Awards?
I really do. I mean, you look at all the other categories that are recognized, and I mean, we put a lot of thought and heart and soul into the action pieces we do. And by the way, try and keep everybody safe and try and make it look as exciting as possible. And I think it, especially when it's something that helps drive the narrative of the story, is really an integral part of the movie. And I absolutely feel that we should be part of that.
So over the past 4 years, Mr. Robert Nagel, you have worked on about 29 productions that together have grossed worldwide over $9 billion. $9 billion. Knowing those statistics, what goes through your mind?
That's a number I can't even wrap my head around, to be honest. It's a big number.
And you've been part of that.
Yeah, I feel very fortunate. You know, I kind of keep my head down and keep press forward with what I do. And just do the best I can.
So what's coming up next for Robert Nagel?
Nothing definitive yet, you know. Hopefully this film gets me to the next level. I would love to start directing Second Unit, which is the action pieces. And that's kind of where I'm pressing for from here.
Three quick questions. Are you ready?
Absolutely.
Okay. Red or white?
Red.
Day or night?
Right now, day.
Ford or Ferrari?
See, that's a tough one. I love them both. I don't know that I could pick one, and I love them for different reasons.
Robert Nagel, thank you so much for your time, and congratulations on a great, entertaining film. Well done.
Thank you, Mark. I really appreciate it. And I love hearing that you enjoyed the film to that level. That really makes all the hard work worthwhile, and I greatly, greatly appreciate it, and appreciate speaking with you.
Oh, you're more than welcome. And I ruined my makeup. What more can you ask for?
That's why I said it. I guess I did my job.
Thanks again.
Take care. Thank you.
How long we know each other, Ken? I ever break a promise to you? I will put you in the driver's seat at Le Mans. You just shut your mouth and let me do my thing. All right.
Come here. Morning, Shelby.
Morning, Molly.
I'm yours.
I'll go to hell.
And that's it, folks. Ferrari wins the 24 Hours of Le Mans for the fifth consecutive year.
Mr. Ford, Ferrari has a message for you, sir.
What did he say?
He said Ford makes ugly little cars in ugly factories. And he called you fat, sir.
We're going to bury Ferrari at Le Mans.
So the great Carroll Shelby is going to build a car to beat Ferrari with a Ford.
Correct.
And how long did you tell them you needed? 200 or 300 years?
90 days.
Ford hates guys like us because we're different.
Heard he's difficult.
Ken? No, Ken's a puppy dog.
It's awful. There's a problem. The computer will find it.
Get some Scotch tape and a ball of wool.
What are they doing?
Making your car faster.
That's more rocket!
Ken Miles is not a Ford man.
We're on the verge of something, and now you tell me that I can't have the best man in the world behind the wheel?
Give me one reason why I don't fire everyone, starting with you.
Well, sir,
we're lighter, we're faster.
So nice.
And that don't work, we're nastier.
Go ahead, Carol. Go to war.
Woman.
You got a plan?
It's high risk.
I thought the whole point was to win the damned race.
If this were a beauty pageant, we just lost.
Looks aren't everything.
Hi, my name is Joanne Vanicola, and I'm an actor and a writer, and I was first on Rainbow Country with Mark Tara on CIUT 895 FM, discussing the massacre at Pulse Club in Orlando. I realized how important it was for our community to have a radio station, specifically for our issues, to talk about people in the LGBTQ community and to provide an outlet for our stories, to discuss our politics, culture, and give voice to the issues that matter to us. And, of course, our artists and the things that we do globally and right here in Toronto and talk about culture. And without people like Mark Tara providing a space for this with a radio show like this, then we wouldn't have that voice. So, support. Tune in. Thank you.
Hi, this is Emily Saliers from Indigo Girls, and you're listening to Rainbow Country on CIUT 89.5 FM.
Ford v. Ferrari is available now on streaming, so if you can, check it out. You just might cry, you just might laugh, and you just might ruin your makeup. To keep up to date with all things country, Rainbow Country, follow me on socials at Mark Tara Music. Do you have a guest suggestion? Maybe you have a show idea? Send me an email. I want to hear. mark@marktara.com. The podcast for Rainbow Country is available wherever you get your favorite podcasts. And by the way, this week we were number 4 on Podomatic's Gay and Lesbian chart. Plus, the official Rainbow Country playlist is out now on Spotify. And of course, everything is hooked up at my website, marktara.com. Finally, I want to take this time to thank you for taking your time to be with me. Remember, we live in days of making dreams come true. So believe in yourself, and the world will believe in you.
Hi, I'm Mayor John Tory, and you're listening to CIUT 89.5 FM.